The Medallion, Chapter 50. A huge smile lit up Sari's face, and she crouched down to touch Corvin's cheek, as if she needed to make sure he was real. Sari straightened up and pulled him easily to his feet. She was taller and stronger than before, and moved easily without being hunched over. Corvin was happy for her, but his hope for Kate faltered. Sari must have eaten the last seed from the mother plant. It was the only thing that would explain her new strength and vitality. "That crafty man of mine," she chuckled, patting Corvin's shoulder. "In the early days, we were all alone here in Molokar for a very long time. Finally, a few others began to join us, those who wanted nothing to do with the rule of the Chief Watcher. Then Joktan told me we had to move out of our first place near all the others because the cavern wall was going to collapse inside our house. He cut us this new home way back here, and sure enough, the wall collapsed at our old place. I always wondered how he knew that would happen. Now I see he planned it all along." She beamed at the memory of her husband. "Here I've been searching the whole cavern looking for another way out, and all that time Joktan had hidden the exit right in our own home." Kate's body stiffened on the table and her face contorted in pain. Corvin knelt beside her, his anger rushing to the surface. The old man was hurting her again. Biting cold from the medallion cut into his chest, and he pulled on the chain to get the medallion free from inside his tunic. Sari moved Corvin firmly to one side and sat beside Kate, running her hands over the girl's face, around her neck and down her arm. Opening Kate's hand, she probed the small scar where the power of the mother plant had entered the girl's body. Sari turned to look at Corvin, a puzzled expression on her face. "I don't understand. Her body is close to death, yet her spirit is strong." Her eyes went to his chest. "Let me see the medallion." Before he could stop her, Sari reached out and grasped the medallion. Corvin tried to pull it away, but her fingers were locked in a vice-like grip. She didn't breathe for a long moment, then exhaled, tucking the medallion back under his outer cloak. Her eyes focused on his, and her gray head bobbed in thought. "So he has captured our Kate." Her eyes narrowed. "What a bitter old man. He wields the compassion of others like a weapon. We need to bring him to justice. His evil ways must come to an end." She gave him a thin smile and patted his cheek. "Don't give up hope, Corvin. I know a few things that will help us bring Kate back." She went to a basket by the wall, took out a piece of cloth, and covered Kate's body. The images of a young man and a woman at the top of the tapestry lay on each of Kate's shoulders. It was the same old piece that used to hang over Sari's front door. Sari traced a finger over the embroidered face of the girl on Kate's left shoulder and mumbled a fragment of a poem to herself. Corvin caught the words, "May it be so," at the end. Sari turned to look at him. "You can speak now. He has left the chamber and cannot hear you for the time being. When he returns, the medallion will grow cold and heavy. When that happens, signal me, but be certain you do not say anything you do not want him to hear." She winked at him. "But we may have you say a few things that will make him uncertain of what to do. He is an arrogant old fool who is easily swayed if we speak to his fears, and I know what he fears most." Sari jumped, stared at Corvin's feet, then laughed out loud. "I thought it was another mouse." Corvin looked down at a round fruit wobbling on the ground. "It is a mouse," Sari said, "a rather large one that appears to like fruit." Pushing a woven basket out of the way, she revealed Gavin sitting on his haunches, a half-eaten green orb in each hand. "So who do we have here?" "His name is Gavin. He helped me carry Kate to your door, but he doesn't speak." Gavin's eyes sparkled, and he held up one of the fruits to Sari. "That's okay, small one. There are plenty more where those came from. Come, I will show you." She hoisted Gavin off the ground, set him on his feet, and turned to Corvin. "You come too. Kate will rest here while we gather a few more things to help sustain her body." She approached a curtain of vines that now veiled the doorway out to the Molokar settlement, and as her hand touched the green leaves, the vines spread apart of their own accord. "Now you must both close your eyes. I have the most wonderful surprise for you." She took Corvin's hand and whispered in his ear, "I'm so glad you came back to see this." As she led him out of the cave, the air grew warmer and moist. The scent of flowers filled his nostrils, and a wash of bright light swept over his eyes, shining pink through his eyelids. "Keep them shut now, no peeking." Sari sounded like his mother the year his parents brought him a bicycle for his birthday. Corvin kept his eyes closed, but his ears picked up the sound of running water in the distance. They were heading toward the Molokar karst, and the memory of the day Joktan had died grew stronger with each step. Sari stopped and let go of his hand. "Okay, boys, you can open your eyes." Corvin blinked, then blinked again. The scene before him was so oddly familiar he had to think twice about where he was. It was like he had stepped inside the huge painting hanging behind the counter at Barron's store. Mrs. Barron had brought the painting back from her honeymoon in Mexico. It was a tropical beach scene that glowed with vibrant color against a black velvet background. It was hard to believe he was in the Malacar settlement, for now a huge orange sun hung low on the horizon, its reflection stretching across a small lake and inviting him to walk across the ripples of its golden path. A lone palm tree leaned out over a boat dock, its curved trunk neatly framing the setting sun. On the right side of the lake, a steep slope of broken boulders was covered with flowered vegetation cascading down to the water. Surprised? Sari came closer and took his arm, ushering him down the path and pointing at the glowing sun. I planted the seed you left me as high as I could reach on the wall near the water to give it lots of moisture. It grew so fast, I was sure I could hear it growing. Gavin ran by them and tore around the water to the dock. In seconds, his clothes were off and he had jumped into the lake, scattering the golden light to the shoreline. Corvin looked closer at what appeared to be a palm tree. It was the crane that had lowered Jockton to his death and then had been bent and pulled down by the beast Corvin had fought inside the karst and Jockton had killed with the fire stick. Now water filled the karst overflowing and was running away under the platform supporting the bent crane. The dock creaked under Corvin's weight and he sank onto the bench. This was the very place where the boy in shackles had stood, his eyes pleading for help. Now a network of vines carpeted the deck and wound their way up the twisted metal of the crane. The metal arc bounced. Gavin was pulling himself out of the water on the rope attached to the end. The boy smiled at him, then swam over to the dock with the rope in tow. Clambering out, he ran to the back of the dock, reached up high on the rope and swung out, letting go and tucking his knees up to make a splash. He surfaced with a grin on his face, grabbed the rope and made his way back to do it again. They collapsed the passage leading into the settlement, Sari said, pointing to the boulder-strewn rock slope on the far side of the lake. Then they planted some of those terrible poison vines on the other side to keep people out of the tunnel. Vile things that burn you alive, and some have made their way through the cracks. Their explosion also blocked up the river outlet in the karst below, and the river rose to the top, and I was afraid the whole cavern would be flooded. That is why I was searching for a way out. Thankfully, when it overflowed, the water ran down to the gardens where the soldiers found that crack in the core wall. Corvin looked behind him to where the water flowed down a series of small waterfalls until it found its way to the man-made cavern where he and Kate had escaped from the core. Now there is a deep pool near the core wall, but it started running away and has not grown any larger. I think there must be another crack in the shield besides the one you and Kate left through. Now I use the stream to water the gardens our people planted. You won't believe how much fruit they are producing. Come and see. As Corvin crossed through to the next cavern, the light grew even stronger. Jorid and the captain of the guard were in such a hurry to close the settlement they left a few of the smaller Lumians behind. The vines connected to the mother plant, and now look at them. Every time I come in, there are more of them. Corvin put a hand against the rough support pillar holding up the ceiling. The bright light in the room was making him dizzy. He focused on an apple-sized Lumian bulb on a vine that wound down the pillar. Go ahead and eat a few, Sari said. They grow back so fast you could eat another one by the next light. Corvin touched the fruit. Although he could feel the power within, he had no desire to eat its seed. The intense energy from the Lumians in this room was enough to satisfy any craving for the power. This was a more natural use of the Lumian energy, the way it must have been for everyone in the core before the plants became so scarce. A small creature zipped out of the leaves, ran down his arm and over his back. Corvin leapt and twisted to see where it went. Sari laughed. It's just a mouse. A number of mice and other small animals have been moving in, but thankfully none of the larger tarks. That is one creature I can't stand having around. She looked around the upper reaches of the pillars. A few times, I'm sure I've even seen a rantle flying across this garden. Corvin scanned the spaces between the Lumian plants overhead. Could the rebel leader's rantle be spying on them? If the creature was able to find its way into the Malacar settlement, it could lead its master here. It's such a shame that I'm the only one left behind to enjoy these gardens, Sari said. I felt bad knowing how hard our people used to work here under palace guard and barely kept themselves from starving to death. All around the stone pillars were plants of many sizes, shapes, and colors growing out in rows that fanned out from the stream. This was the core of my childhood, Sari said quietly. Once all our cities were full of light and beauty. We lived in peace with our world and with each other. She sighed. Like all the others, I never saw the great destruction coming. I never imagined what unrestrained greed could do to our world. Sari straightened up. But as long as we have life, we have hope. If I had some help, this place would rival the floating gardens of Roseanne. Isn't that the dead city where the rebels live? Corvin asked. It is a dark ruin now, but in its unspoiled state, Roseanne was truly incredible. Lumian vines were woven into suspended walkways that ran between the massive pillars of their city. You could walk up high amidst the lights and eat freely from the gardens. Such a beautiful place. Rantals were flying everywhere, a few large enough for a child to ride upon, but it's all gone now. A little farther down the trail, she reached into a spike bush to pull out a red cucumber-like fruit. These have not been seen in the core since I was a child. Now a dormant seed has been brought back to life by the mother plant. She held the fruit up to her ear and flicked it with a finger. Satisfied with the sound, she snapped the fruit in half and handed a piece to him. Peeling away the red skin from her half, she sucked on the white fruit like a popsicle. Corvin followed her example. The flavor reminded him of a fresh pineapple he had once tasted. It began melting and running down his fingers. Eat it quickly or it'll be gone, Sari said, licking the juice from her lips. My mother always told me that bonny fruit is like your life. You need to enjoy it while you still have it in your hand. She sucked out the last of the white core and tossed the skin at the base of the plant. Corvin did the same and crouched down beside her to watch the sticky juice off his hands. The swirling water ran into the pool at the lower end of the cavern, and on its far side, a jagged fracture in the dark rock of the cavern revealed the creamy surface of the core shield. A group of three small lumians hung inside the grotto like the chandelier in the nave of the church in Fenwood. That was where Reu was now entombed within the rock, the man who had given his life to save Corvin and Kate from the leader of the Rakash. Corvin sat on a boulder by the water's edge. There were great people in the core, people who were full of love and honor, but he wasn't one of them. He had started down the same path as those who had brought about the great destruction. In this garden, so full of life, he felt strong, like he would never eat another Lumian seed as long as he lived. But what about tomorrow when he was back in the darkness? Sari put her hands on his shoulders. My mother also said you cannot let your fears of what might happen tomorrow rob you of today. I am certain that the problems of tomorrow will be quite different than what you are worried about right now. Corvin nodded. Sari was right. When he was most afraid, he did the wrong things trying to control the future. The vine in the niche swayed in the soft breeze off the water, the three lights twirling and sparkling in the rocky grotto. If he were to be an honorable man like Reu, he needed help. It was time to tell Sari about eating the seeds so she could teach him how to avoid ever eating them again. Corvin stood to his feet, energized by his new resolve, but the sudden cold weight of the medallion dropped him back to the stone. He was being summoned back to the chamber. His hand shook as it rose toward the silver star. Sari crouched behind him, wrapped her arms around his chest, and whispered in his ear, "Don't be afraid. I will go with you." She put her hand over Corvin's and closed their fingers around the medallion.